Welcome to the Development Download with Leaps and Bounds.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Development Download, where we break down child development topics in a way that actually makes sense for parents, caregivers, and professionals. I'm Lisa, occupational therapist and co-owner of Leaps and Bounds Pediatric Therapy.
And I'm Erin, also an occupational therapist here at Leaps and Bounds. Today we're talking about two senses that often fly under the radar, taste and smell.
So when people think about sensory processing, they usually think of touch and movement and hearing, but taste and smell also play a huge role in how kids experience the world, especially when it comes to feeding, overall comfort, and emotional memories.
Okay, Lisa, let's play a quick game here.
Okay.
Okay, so tell me a memory that's associated with this smell, okay?
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Pine.
Cutting down Christmas trees with my family.
Yes. I often just think Christmas, but yeah, cutting down the tree, I love. Cinnamon.
Making snickerdoodles with my grandma.
Oh. Stinky smell.
Got it. My son's soccer bag left in my car.
Yes. I just had that recently. It happened to me, Lisa.
Yes.
It was funny. I actually asked my son to take his soccer bag out of the car, which he did, which I appreciated. But the next morning I went in and I opened the door and I'm like, oh my gosh, what
is
that?
It's terrible. I know.
And of course he left his shoes. He took the soccer bag,
but the shoes are the worst part. Yes. Right, Erin. So these systems are closely linked, which is why you can't taste as much when you have a stuffy nose. They're both part of how our brain determines what's safe, familiar, and enjoyable. So another example is when kids are in school and the cafeteria is starting to cook the food, even like the classrooms can start to smell it. Kids will start to get hungry. Their mouths will start to salivate because that's both of those systems working together to get us hungry.
I think even Disney uses that trick where they put the smells out through the grates and then it makes people really hungry.
Yes.
Which then makes them buy all their food. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly. And so for children whose sensory systems around food, cooking, and even smells in the environment can influence everything from appetite to behavior. Some kids may be super sensitive, noticing every tiny smell or refusing foods with certain flavors, while others might crave strong taste or smells to stay regulated. Okay, Lisa. So I have an example for you, and this actually just happened to me this morning. And I think this is a perfect example of how the smell impacted my behavior. So I was walking the dog early this morning and it was still dark. So give me like just
no visual input.
Yeah. Yes. Setting the scene here. And so I was walking the dog and all of a sudden I smelled a skunk. It was strong smelling. And I typically go on a path that's very like consistent, and I totally just turned the dog around, and the dog was really confused.
Right,
because normally we have a path, but I could not take
the chance. And he probably wanted to check out the smell.
Exactly, he's on the opposite. I'm like, no, we gotta go away. So it really did change my behavior and my reaction because that smell came into that processing center, and it's saying red alert, red alert.
Right,
and so I went the other way.
Yeah, to stay regulated.
Exactly.
Taste and smell are actually some of our earliest sensory systems to develop, even before birth. Babies are exposed to flavors through the amniotic fluid and later through breast milk and formula. That's why introducing a variety of foods early on in a positive and pressure-free way can really help shape how kids tolerate some of those new tastes later on.
And it's not just about picky eating. Some children who struggle with sensory processing might not register taste or smell the same way others do. That might make new foods seem overwhelming or even scary. And I think that is something that's really important for us to even recognize is that parents might cook foods that they really enjoy and they then present it to the child and the child has a different reaction. So I think that's super important that what we think tastes good might not taste really great to our kids.
Right.
And then on the other hand, some kids might seek out really spicy, sour, or crunchy foods because those foods give their body the strong input they crave.
We often have parents ask, how do I know if my children's taste or smell sensitivity is a sensory issue or just a phase? So, I mean, that's a good question. Kids are going to have different phases as they're exploring some of the food. And so definitely using your observation skills to kind of figure out what's going on is really important. If you notice that your child is gagging or turning away from certain smells like toothpaste or cooking smells or cleaning products, that can be a sign that they're over responsive.
And Lisa, I actually have an example, which is kind of convenient that I have two clients on my schedule right now that are kind of showing some of these signs. And some things that parents presented to me is that they don't want to engage with their peers at lunchtime. Mm-hmm. They really have been shutting themselves down. And that's the time to really be able to socialize with their peers. And
there's so many smells around lunchtime.
And the parents even continue to express like, hey, like family events, like this mm-hmm. child tends to go into a different room while the family is sitting down and having these meals. So it's really impacting their function. Mm-hmm. And then this other client, he actually, he's still little, so, but he expressed that some of his friends actually smell bad to him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that that's probably impacting his social ability.
Right.
And you know that if he is around those kids, he's probably only thinking about the smell, right? Not the things that are happening around him.
Like his brain is not allowing that information to filter out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And he gets focused on it.
And so I just, I love that we're doing this podcast on this because I think it, what we said earlier is that it's a very underrated system.
For sure. Well, and just as kids can be over-responsive, you can also have kids that are under-responsive. So you might have a child that licks or mouths non-food items. They're consistently chewing on clothing or seeking out a lot of strong flavors. Those might be kids that are under-responsive and they're seeking that additional input to get better understand what it is.
And we always remind families, sensory differences aren't bad. They're just the way our child's brain processes input. Our job is to help them find strategies that make their world more comfortable and functional, just like those kids that I just talked about.
Right. And it's hard to do that until you can really understand it. And so that is, it's helpful as we're talking about all of these things. So if you have a child who's sensitive to taste or smell, you can start with exposure without pressure, just letting them play with food, smell it, touch it, cook with it without expecting them to eat it right away. And cooking together is such a great sensory activity because it involves so many things. You can involve smell and taste and touch and sight all at once.
I think even the example of you mentioning about the cafeteria, right, mm-hmm. is that that olfactory comes in and processes it and actually starts to make changes within the intestines.
Right.
And it actually starts the movement there, right. which then creates the feeling of hunger. And even for those kids who crave strong input, try offering foods with bold flavors or interesting textures like crunchy pretzels, sour fruit snacks, spicy dips, or even things more really cold, like frozen, in a fun, safe way. You can even build sensory experiences through play, making scented Play-Doh, smelling spice jars, using scented markers. I also like kind of incorporating things that we could be doing just in our everyday kind of ability. So when we're out for a walk, talk about name that smell.
Which yeah. in my experience would be the skunk.
The skunk, yes.
You know, and smell can really be, it has a strong link to emotion and it can be really calming as well. I had a client years ago that she was in high school and she was really struggling. She was very dysregulated during passing periods in high school. But one of the things that we determined as a strategy is she loved the smell of like peppermint, like candy canes, that kind of thing. So we came up with, really, she generated the strategy to get lotion and to put lotion on her hands
That's
during
amazing.
Passing period so that it could kind of calm her and she could stay regulated during that. So we use it as a way to help understand the smells and then also as a tool for therapy as well.
Yeah, and I think, Lisa, too, from the opposite side effect, is that some smells can be triggering.
Right, right. Yeah, so you might have a smell that, and it's so hard to detect, but maybe you have a child that had a, they were eating a certain type of food, and maybe they gagged a little bit early on when they were really young. And it probably was a situation that didn't seem like something that happened. It didn't seem like a big response from the parent. But that memory might be stored, and that child might have another like negative response when that food is introduced later.
I think that, I mean, that even has happened to me. If I maybe was sick after eating a certain food, it's hard to get back to that food.
Right, for sure.
Eventually, though, I'm able to get back to, like, you know, those favorite things like pizza. And
yes, for sure. So in OT, we often work with kids who have feeding challenges rooted in sensory processing. So understanding taste and smell helps us to build tolerance through play and routine and gradual exposure. So sometimes a child's comfort with smell and taste can also help regulate other systems, which can improve attention, calming stress or anxiety, and can even support better sleep. And one thing, we talked about this when we were talking about the vestibular system, but the vestibular system is so linked throughout the whole body neurologically that it can support overall regulation. So sometimes when maybe a child is getting ready to sit down for mealtime and mealtime might be stressful, you might think of incorporating movement before or after some of those stressful situations to get that child's body ready for an activity that might be a little more challenging. So movement is our go-to for any of the systems.
Yeah. These systems are so connected to emotion and memory. Progress here can make a huge difference in a child's overall regulation and confidence. It's one of those areas where small wins really build up over time. And that just brings me back to those kids that maybe just have a hard time going into that cafeteria. If they can really be able to process and understand that smell is not dangerous and that their bodies are okay, just think about the social interactions that they now can gain. And so it's pretty empowering for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And you want to build those successes for them. So the next time you notice your child turning up their nose at dinner or sniffing everything in sight, remember, it's not just behavior. It's their sensory system talking and trying to figure out their world.
And by understanding those sensory needs, you can support your child in building comfort, curiosity, and confidence with new experiences. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Development Download.
Don't forget to follow us wherever you get your podcasts and check out our social media for more sensory tips and activities.
See you next time.
You've been listening to The Development Download with Leaps and Bounds.